3, 2, 1.
You get to decide who can see you in what light. And I feel like people right now are just discovering the term boundaries and how to set boundaries. And subhanAllah, I felt like hijab was that boundary for us.
Our storyteller today is Marwa Atik, an LA-based advocate and designer. In 2009, and at 18 years old, she co-founded the brand Vela with her sister, a fashion-forward line of scarves. She's what I call a style icon. I also call her an OG because when I first started wearing hijab around the same time Vela came to fruition, she was the only person I knew doing what she was doing, creating a product that made people who wear the headscarf feel incredible without compromising on style. Now, over a decade later, Vela serves thousands of women around the world, constantly innovating in the hijab space and creating stunning curations of collections throughout the year. This is a long overdue conversation. Marwa and I started building our careers around the same time and have been each other's cheerleaders from the beginning. I'm so thrilled to welcome you to this episode of Podcast Noor. This interview, this conversation, this storytelling session is, I don't know, 10 years in the making? How long has it been?
Longer. No. Yeah, like 12 maybe.
12 years since you started, Vela.
Yeah.
Or 12 years since I've known you. Yeah.
Yeah. When did we meet? Yeah, 10 years.
I'm going to stick to a decade. We can find out the specifics another time, but it feels like a lifetime. I definitely feel like I've known you my entire hijab identity life. Like, you are the first person. You know what's wild is, so I know you through my cousin, and
yes,
she would wear your hijabs and they looked so cool. And it was like the first time I'd ever seen hijabs look so chic, because I used to totally, like, when I was a little kind of anti-hijab for a minute. Yeah, I was a little annoyed, and I was like, never going to wear this. Like, a huge part of it was also like, I didn't like how it looked. And I thought it was like not stylish and not, it was like for older women. And then I saw like my cool chic cousin wearing it. And then all of like you LA, like Muslims who were actually like embracing your style and your identity. And you had these iconic like chiffon pinned up, like layered ruffles, lace, like you had that. Mm-hmm. I literally was telling Adam the other day, I wonder if you will ever bring those back, because that was such a look. Like, you created this iconic signature style of hijab. And up until then, I feel like the way I would be able to decipher people's hijab style was what culture they were from. Like, because depending on your culture was like, oh, they wear their hijab very Syrian or very Turkish or very Egyptian. Like, that was how we were able to identify it.
But then, like, being a third cultured American, it's like, yeah, you're Libyan and yeah, you're Syrian, but you have identified your own sense of style. So, like, I guess Vela was claiming our narrative of that. It's like, this is our style type of thing.
Well, to get started, I mean, I feel like I jumped straight in. I just had to say, like, I'm like looking at you and I feel like I haven't seen your face in a really long time, but but you have been like a part of my journey for so long. And I mean, you're a legend. You and your sister are legends. And honestly, we love you so much.
I love you. You don't understand. Like, I'm holding back tears right now, because like, this is just so emotional for us to like be in this place when, you guys, I was literally in her bed just like a decade ago, and we were just like chilling and talking about all these dreams and talking about like all these like ideas and places that we wanted to go. And so to be here is just like so surreal.
Yeah, because we were both talking about the things that we're doing now. Like, we didn't know what it was going to look like or the direction it was going to go in. But wow, I mean, reflecting on it, like, how is your heart with just knowing and sitting with the last decade?
Yeah, I feel very grateful, and I feel like timing is so perfect, and I feel like this just happened like at the right time, because I've grown and learned so much, and I'm just grateful to kind of pave this like platform through for like the next generation. Like, that's the way I'm looking at it now. Because when Vela started, it started because like I needed it, right? Mm-hmm. And then as it grew, I realized so many other women needed it as well. And now, like, fast forward, like, I'm doing this for them. Mm-hmm. And that brings me so much purpose. And just shifting that mind thought, like, has changed so much in terms of, like, the business and how it's grown, and how I've grown through it. Because it really was, I was a baby and it was my baby. You know?
And I'm just realizing now, I think you started it in 2009, and I think I started wearing hijab early 2010. So like you created, you like took over and created the space that needed to be populated. And because the extent of like where people sold hijab, like my parents used to help out my uncle who would like sell hijabs from Libya or Egypt or something, and they would like sell them at the conventions, and it was the squares with the little flowers and those like weird colors, and it was like that was like the to the extent of it. And so then even when I started wearing it, the first scarves I ever got were from Aldo Shoes, and they were so thick because they were winter scarves. And I was like, I'm gonna just put this on my head. And so we would always, like, when Banana Republic or J. Crew, like, would have those, like, summer scarves, we were, like, buying every single one because that was the extent of what we had access to.
Exactly. And we had to make it work. So you bought that thick scarf and you're like, either you love the color or it was a scarf, period. And you're like,
it was never perfect, though. There was always something.
Yes. And even when the uncles would go back home and pick up like all the scarves and like sell it here, like I remember like my mom would do the same, where like she would ask our uncles back in Syria to like bring back like a whole bunch of scarves, and me and my sister would go through maybe like 50 scarves, and we like narrow it down to two that we end up fighting over. And that kind of goes back to, I mean, the fact that, you know, it's a male-dominated industry, so men aren't going to know exactly how women want to feel.
What's a male-dominated industry?
The fashion industry as, like, a whole. Generally speaking, the people, like, up at the top who are owning the factories or who are doing the wholesale buying, generally around the world, it is men, which is so interesting to me because women purchase the most. I think like we just sensed that lack, or I sensed the lack, and then I think people need to understand, like, when Nuud was 2010 and like 2009 era, like, we were very young. Like, I was 18 when the inception of Vela happened, when I started.
Yeah, it was 15, 16.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 15, exactly. And like and we already had these like goals of like, no, like, this needs to change. It didn't happen because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna start a business. Like, it just happened because there was a big space that felt empty. And it's kind of like what you said, like, I never saw myself wearing the hijab either, because I'm like, that's not
really
me. Yeah,
I felt like you wore it. Did you wear it younger?
I wore it younger, but I wore it for, I was naive. I was like, oh, I'm gonna wear it, you know? Like I looked up to my mother, I looked up to my sister, and I'm like, they wore it, I wanna wear it. So
like, you didn't know why yet.
I didn't know why. But it was an easier transition because I knew, I'm like, oh, I know I am going to, or I have to, in my mind. And because these women that I looked up to wore it, I wanted to wear it. But then when I wore it, I was like, I don't feel like Marwa. Like, Marwa's missing. And it felt like that for such a long time. Yeah. And it was really not until I wore the hijab till when I started to express my fashion more. Like, I remember, like, my sister would help me, and we would sit in my closet and we would make, like, flashcards of different types of outfits that I could make, because I only had a very selected amount of items. And so we would write down how I could mix and match, like, pants and tops and I would like shuffle them every day.
Your sister, by the way, is your co-founder and is also very iconic.
So shout out to Tasneem. Yes. Shout out to Tasneem. I need to, honestly, she needs to be more at the forefront. She loves being like behind the scenes, but I'm like, no.
Yeah. That's her journey.
I know. I was like, you got to put your face in more. But yeah, so Tasneem really, 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 really was that backbone. I had that. I was so grateful and so lucky to have that support, because if you don't have that support at such a young age, like your dream is just going to feel so far away. And so she really helped to make it like tangible, and she was really passionate about it too.
Mm. Something I've been thinking a lot about, and I acknowledge that this is also like a really personal question, so we don't have to go into it, even though people think it's like up for public grabs, but I've been thinking a lot about my own like hijab journey and realizing like why I still wear it, or why I like wore it to begin, because I definitely think that when I wore it, I was in like a similar mind state where I was just like trying to grasp onto any sense of identity. And then the people around me, like the women around me who wore it, like it was like almost like they had a secret, like they knew something that I didn't, like they were confident and they felt like powerful and they chose this thing. And I personally, like, modesty was never the thing that was not something that I related to or like I mm-hmm. identified as. Like, I still am like, I'm not a modest person. Yeah, like yeah. that I like have so much tension with that word in general, and that's something I can unpack at another time. And I had this like big breakthrough actually 2 days ago, and I wrote this whole little piece about just like my realization around it. I mean, it's a really good piece, but I
want to read it.
I'll send it to you after this, because I'm okay, like, okay. I just wrote it, so I don't know how much I want to share of it, but it's like a quick piece, and the download that I had was that I think I just love having the choice to just like choose who gets to see what. Like, mm-hmm. I just like knowing that some people get to see more parts of me than others, and I get to decide who that is. And like, that to me is like, that's the extent of like what anybody needs. You don't even need to know that, but that's the extent of like what I'll let you know. Cause every other reason, every other aspect of the reason is so personal. And you have one of my favorite hijabs that you made is like the leopard print one. And you rarely ever have text on your scarves ever. Mm-hmm. But that one specifically is gorgeous leopard. It's so light. I love it because like I don't have to steam it all the time because it's such a great, obviously amazing fabric. Yeah. And it literally says choice is power. And I remember mm-hmm. wearing it in a boardroom one time and having an intense conversation, and like the hijab came up and I can't remember which room it was in. I just remember literally picking up my scarf that I was wearing and showing them what it said. No and being like, way. This is what we need to come back to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
that's so amazing.
It's like, because it's like you're literally wearing a part of your story. And that doesn't mean that everybody is entitled to different aspects of your story. But like, so to me, like that is who you've always been to me. Like, you made the thing that we were looking for. Like, you created something that gave me the confidence. Like, I was telling Adam this recently, like, you're huge.
Stop.
Yeah, you're like a huge reason that I wear hijab. Like, you are a huge reason that I still wear it. Like, it was like you broke through something that wasn't a story that was written for us yet.
Yeah.
Especially as Americans. And you were like I don't know if people know, but you went to fashion school. Like, you made the commute to DTLA. You were at school all the time. I remember you were like still using that fabric book or like the trends book, like way after. You were always studying. You were always in the factories. Yeah. You like were traveling to India. You were in communication with people, and everything came down to quality. And I remember it being like this thing where the scarves are so simple, but it's like an essence. It's like more than just like a piece of fabric. It's like the way that it drapes onto your head, the way that it dances around your neck, the things that you can do with it, the weight, the length, the colors, the color schemes, the like collections. And I feel like so many people don't understand like the significance behind that. And you, I think mm-hmm. like, I don't know, just I feel like I could even do this interview for you, so I shouldn't do that. I want to like give you so much space, but I like yeah, want to also give you your flowers because like you mean so much to me and like the work that you've done means so much to me. But speak to just like, what is the story? Why did you maintain that for like, yeah. and go back to it over and over again? Cause it's also like you maintained a sense of integrity that you've had since the beginning until now. And it's very clear mm-hmm. that it's a for us, by us situation.
Yeah. First of all, thank you so much for sharing all of that. I love you to death and I love you so much. And it means so much that you even shared that piece because I was contemplating putting that text on there because I'm like, are girls ready for like text? Because our scarf is essentially making that statement without having to write words on our heads. Mm-hmm. Like our scarf is the word, you know,
and it's like already. I love that.
In terms of, yeah. And in terms of our space, in terms of like living in like a third cultured space, like our hijab is the actual statement. But I felt like it was, I felt in my heart, that's how I was feeling too. I needed to be reminded that I'm choosing this and it's kind of like what you said, like you love the fact that you get to decide who can see you in what light. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people right now are just discovering the term boundaries and how to set boundaries. And SubhanAllah, I felt like hijab was that boundary for us. And it is one of those things where that's
that's an unlock.
Yeah. And it's just like a beautiful blessing that keeps uncovering every couple of years because it's so normal to have these lost years of like, why am I doing this? Why am I wearing this? And then you have these little epiphanies because hijab is such a personal journey. It means something to every person in a different way. And so thank you for sharing that because it reminded me also like why I stick to wearing it too because like I was even telling my husband this. I was like, I don't think my personality is modest. Like, because modesty is not just like covering. It's really like etiquette and your character.
But that's why I've always been like, I'm very clear. Like, that's not, that is.
I don't have a modest personality.
Identity. No, you don't.
Yeah. I'm like,
that's why we get along so much.
Exactly. And so.
And that's not dog on people who do. It's just to say like. That you cannot assume because someone is wearing a hijab like mm-hmm. that modesty is the extent of why they wear it. Maybe for some people that is why they wear it. And that's like,
yeah, to keep for them it's, or to, yeah. Like,
but that's their form of self-expression, that. Right? Mm-hmm. So like they're showing you their personality that way. But I so relate to the boundaries thing. I like that was the word that I was missing because I'm obsessed with talking about boundaries and learning about boundaries and setting boundaries now. And I guess like that was the word that was missing from this realization that I had was just like, I just wanted I wanted control over my own story and my own like.
And it's like, so important
who I am.
Yeah. And it's so important because women are still having to fight for almost everything. And mm-hmm. and I felt like hijab was always that power move or it always felt like a power move for me. And in terms of like the way that Vela has like transformed and how we've like evolved is like in the beginning, like, yes, you are right. Like when we did the ruffles and the intricacy mm-hmm. of like the zippers and the ostrich feathers, I got to
miss the zippers.
I know I got to bring Vela's OG style back. Eventually,
imagine doing zippers on like this fabric.
Yeah.
Game changer.
Wait, Marwa,
come
like,
on.
Right
By form. The way, I just want you all to know that like Marwa supplies my underscarves. She doesn't sell them yet, but like I will text her and be like, Marwa, like I have no underscarves now. And everybody messages me and they're like, how do you keep your scarves on? And I'm like, I wish I could give you a link, but there are things like you like literally help keep this thing on my head and like have taught me how to
It's coming
soon,
I promise. I'm just yes. And I feel like I gave it to you like over a year ago and I'm so intentional with the things that we develop in.
They take so long.
Within our team. And it takes so long. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize, like, even developing an underscarf, like, the amount of testing that we go through it. Like, even though me and you, we have a very plain scarf on, it is so properly executed to the reason why, like, everything that you just explained, like, I love the fact that it's breathable. I love the fact that it feels lightweight. I love the fact that, like, right now it's on my shoulder, but it's not coming off. And we custom weave all of our fabrics in-house, and our fabrics weigh a certain gram, and that's the reason why it kind of has that happy medium where it's not, it's going to give you the coverage, but it's also going to give you that breathability. And we also custom curate all of our colors, because it was so apparent that the scarves that were in the market, like, yes, it was blue and red, but it wasn't the complementing red undertone that someone needed for their skin tone. So we developed,
because you don't colors. Even think about scarves and skin tone, but, like, we're putting scarves on to frame our face. So, like, the same way that you would consider that with your makeup, it's like it's a part of, like, the thing that you're seeing, like,
hijab. And I consider, like, Avella, like, a hybrid between a beauty brand and a clothing, because we're so, because we develop our own kind of, like, formulas essentially in terms of colors, and we do that in order to highlight a woman's skin tone and make her feel more and more comfortable in her skin. It just feels better when you have something that looks good on you. Like, you just feel better, you know, like, you're like, this is made for me, versus when other colors, there's like, this is washing me out, like. And then it just reinforces that feeling of, oh, I never had a space here. You know, like, this industry never cared about me. We really had to change that. And that feeling that so many Muslim women feel all the time. Like, even, like, the modest fashion industry, which, you know, is coming to light, and it's so beautiful. And because they're realizing, oh, this is $1 billion, you know, industry that we should have tapped into. It's like, And it's like, no duh. But the people who are still in the background of it, I still don't believe are, like, truly understanding the concept of it. Because sometimes, like, certain modest collections will drop, and I'm like, that's still not for me, you know? It'll be like a mid-eye skirt. It's like, I don't need a mid-eye skirt type of thing. So that's why it's really, really important to have, It's exactly what you said, made by us for us.
Yeah. Well, that's always really stood out to me. And also in the frustrations of conversations that we've had. So one of the things that we would always talk about was, like, your frustration with a lot of these bigger corporations coming into the market and then making their own hijabs. We see that a lot, especially with the athletic hijabs. And then when they come out, it's very clear that there were not Muslims involved in making it, or, like, Muslim women who have expertise in either wearing the hijab, like, designing, having their own lines. And people just thought, you know, it's just they just want their heads covered, but don't understand kind of the intricacies behind it. And as a small business, that was incredibly frustrating to you. How do you reconcile that now with, you know, wanting people to be more inclusive and support more demographics, including us, but also not being inclusive?
In terms of certain brands, I still don't know all the information in terms of when big corporate companies do make the athletic hijab, how much are they including Muslim women in terms of testing out the fabric? Or I know that
we have some of that information, and I'm letting you know now that of the, like, three major companies that we have, four that we have had conversations with that have done this, it's little to no. Like, they'll ask a random Muslim person who happens to work in their department a few questions or give them a survey.
Because I've even had a friend that used to work at an athletic company, and she was pitching the hijab athletic scarf for so many years. And finally, when they okayed it, they gave another non-Muslim woman to be the head of it after she created the pitch deck and everything. So I know there are situations like that that do happen. That is the big myth. And that's wrong, and that's the big missing gap there. But I also don't know, example of, like, other companies, when they ask for this survey, or when they ask, oh, here, test this out and let us know what you think how much of that conversation is really taken back to the drawing board in order to put in the effort to, because essentially, suppose a brand has to change something after the prototyping mm-hmm. phase, they have to go back to square one. So obviously, like, if I'm thinking in my business mind how they would think, they're like, oh, it's not worth it. Cost is going to go up, blah, 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 blah. Let's just move forward. And that's bad because once again, we get dismissed. And low-key, Vella is in the works of making an athletic hijab, but it's the same thing going back to the undercap. Like, it's still not fixed, and it's still not what I know how women need it. And it's just frustrating because they're not reinventing the wheel or anything like that. But for me, I was so excited in the beginning when brands did come out with the athletic hijab. Like, it was really emotional. And I was mm-hmm. like, oh my God, like, we're being, like, this is a big moment. We're, like, being heard. And then finally, like, wearing it, I felt like I had to force myself to love it when I didn't.
I couldn't really wear it. I put one on one time and I was like, nope, I'm never going to wear this.
And working out in it, I was like, why is there heat building up around my neck? Like, why is it not escaping? Like, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just so sad and so unfortunate. And I think it's just these big markets, they kind of just want to capitalize on what's trending. And I don't feel like the full support is there. But I do know, like, it is a stepping stone. And I know, like, it is also up to, like, if I have any type of connection or anyone that is willing to listen, like, I will make sure that I make my voice heard, because it's so important in these, like, initial steps for them to, like, know, like, hey, like, this is not what we're, like, loving, or hey, like, this feels very tokenized and we don't feel, you know, it's not inclusivity, and here's why. It is annoying to have to always explain it, but I do understand, given that it is a new space and a lot of people don't understand it, like, why, once again, like, why it's needed to always have to fight for yourself mm-hmm. and always have to explain things, even though it is exhausting. But in my intention, I do it so that the next generation doesn't have to do it.
What is your take on inclusivity? How does that play? Like, what does that mean to Vella, and how do you carry that out?
Inclusivity means to have more than one and to really listen to the dynamic voices and make sure that not only are they feeling seen, but they're being a part of the process. And they're being represented, and they're being in the background and also a part of, like, the marketing aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I feel like in order to be inclusive, you have to be all inclusive, because that's literally the definition of being inclusive. So you can't just look inclusive and not be inclusive, if that makes any mm-hmm. sense.
I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah. I think it's that notion of, you know, diversity when it's to check off boxes versus being inclusive, which is like taking an audit of where you're at and then making sure that you're bringing in the right qualified people who are representative of the communities you're trying to serve. And there's so many different, like, we can always tell when it's surface. Like, we can always tell mm-hmm. if the team behind it is not actually, like, the team that they're trying to
yeah.
have serve.
And that's why I never understood why companies that develop hijab hire non-Muslim, like, majority non-Muslim to head that certain, like, product line. It yeah. just never made really any sense for me.
Well, what because is of that? The fact
so
that
hijab is so personal.
It's, but because I think that most people still see it as just a piece of fabric and don't understand mm-hmm. that. And there's also, like, this line between, like, it is so personal, so I don't want to feel like I ever have to talk about it. But also, when you're trying to serve us by selling us the product, voices need to be heard.
Yeah.
So for you, how have you, like, do you, are you content with where Vela is right now? Do you feel like you are serving the community the way that you want to be serving it? Or do you still feel like you're like resisting in an industry that is male dominated, that isn't typically inclusive, that is very, mm-hmm. you know, front facing, but not always about making the changes behind the scenes?
Yeah. No, Vela's not where it's at today or where I want it to be at, but I know that we have goals and I know that we are getting there. And I know that our community of women is growing and I want them to be a part of that process. And I want all of us to like eventually get to that point of like this space feels like ours. And in the background of Vela, yes, there is a lot of pushback. We oftentimes have to always fight for things that we like want. We're like dismissed all the time. Like there's so many.
Can you give us an example?
So one of the examples is when Vela was trying to, so we were trying to seek options for us to be able to develop our fabric and develop our colors in a sustainable way. And so we had a few options in India. So me and my sister literally just booked a flight and we're like, this is it. Like, you know, like we have to make this huge jump. And back then it was a very big jump for us to just go to India to kind of seek these opportunities. And we met with so many different people. But the only one that really stood out to us was Kusum, who's with us today. And Kusum, in the beginning, started off as a part of a separate, like, agency. And we, like, instantly connected. And what I noticed about her is when we were in, like, meetings and I would try to explain something and the person at the higher level will, like, say that that's not possible or they wouldn't understand what I was trying to explain. She understood me and she was like, no, like this is how she means it. And so she would
like, what is her role?
So her role within Vela is she does all of the quality control, all of the production, everything. So the reason why your scarves make it to America and in our facility is because of Kusum, and she vets everything through and I love her so much for that. And Kusum in the beginning started off as a very small role, but as Vela grew, she also grew and she was able to not only start her own facility, but it's a woman-led facility. And that is huge in India because it is a male-dominated industry. Almost everyone employed are men. And our facility, it is 70% employed women. And Kusum is the one leading it all. And that was something that we had to fight for because it could have been the easier option for us to connect with someone that was like male or someone that was already like established. Like it actually probably would have been easier for Vela. But to be honest, like it's something about that woman to woman connection where like she just understood us and she fought for us. And I think the reason being was because she understood what it was like to be in that position to always be dismissed and pushed back. And so we just grew together really. And we just have such a strong bond. And like now it's for me and her, it's like the back of our hands. Like it's like a smooth system rolling. So yeah, I mean, even that example is just one small example as to the setbacks that the industry still has. Like as much as the industry is changing visually and on social media, it's still very much old school and it still needs to be worked on.
Hi there. If you find our work beneficial and you want to support how we build our company at your service, you can subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/Noor. It's usually personal writings, and as I build a community on there, hopefully more. Your support is how we build. I also curate a weekly newsletter of all the things I'm benefiting from and enjoying that week. Anything from what I'm reading, watching, listening, buying, and more. Like most things, I keep it personal. You can subscribe to it at nortagori.com/newsletter. Now back to the story. Where do you see Vella in the world of fashion? Like, what role do you play? Do you ever, like, it's so niche, but it's also, you serve a very specific audience. And so it's obviously sustainable and you're speaking to a group of people, but you're not playing the same game as everybody else. Like, how do you balance that?
I think like the special thing about Vella, and I think the reason why everyone feels so passionate about it is because the hijab is such a personal connection. Like you feel something. Like someone can tug on your shirt, someone can tug on your pant. You're like, why are you tugging on me? But if you tug on this, like, emotions start to happen. And so we don't develop a product. Like, Vella is a feeling. Vella is an emotion. Vella is a space for a community of women that have sensed that lack. And so we don't sell a product. We sell the experience. And I see Vella just growing and expanding in that experience. And basically, I just want it to be like magnified, where if there is a girl out there that kind of feels like there is something missing, it's kind of like filling in that space for her. And in terms of like the mainstream fashion, I mean, I know Vella is so niche and I think it will always be niche, and that's what I'm so proud of. But I think that it is also very informational, and it does have the power to connect people across different globes, across different faiths. I love, love, love sending out a scarf to my non-Muslim friends. I think they have so much fun with it, and I love the fact that they have so much fun with it. Like, some of them use it as a like beach wrap. Others use their silk scarf like in bed when they have a hair mask. Others use the silk scarf, you know, for like a bandeau top. And I love the fact that it's a scarf, but
so versatile.
It's so versatile. And I also don't know if we should even touch up on this topic or if this topic is so sensitive, because again, everyone feels so differently about it. But I always felt like this is a scarf, but until I put it on, it's a hijab. But if someone had the same exact fabric and they wore it, it's a scarf. You know, and I think that open space needs to happen. And I think that, like, I never felt like I needed to gatekeep it, if that makes any sense. Like, it always brought me joy.
Yeah. I love what you're saying, because it speaks to how personal it is, and it speaks to like the story that we give this. And there is the conversation around cultural appropriation. And I had this incident that I will speak very loosely to, because it, like, I am like the person that so many people in fashion will text to ask, is this problematic? I don't know how I've become this person, but people come to me often with these dilemmas. I had this someone in fashion who runs a publication ask me about a specific image they wanted to run, and it was beautiful. It was two women wearing the hijab, like wearing a scarf around their heads, and and it was like for a big fashion issue, and I was like, this is amazing. They were like, yeah, we thought it was really cool too and stuff. And I was like, I just want to make sure, like, they're Muslim, right? And they were not. They were two white women, but they were wearing it like the way that we wear it. And so I was covered. So rattled, because I was like, they were like, we just love how it looks. And I was like, everybody loves how this looks unless it's like, until it's on Muslim women. Mm-hmm. And they ended up not running. I mean, it was going to be potentially a cover, and they ended up not running it. And I just like kept thinking to myself, like, you all, like, this was something that you were really about to do. Mm-hmm. And didn't think that maybe we should just have Muslim models in this, because it is a beautiful image. It was a fabulous image. It was powerful. It was colorful. It was gorgeous. And they wore the hijab like in a very traditional way, or they wore the scarf in a very traditional way. And I was like really unsettled by this. So when I hear you when you say it's a scarf, until I put it on, it's a hijab. I mean, I have, you know, qualms with the word hijab itself anyway, but like, I'm just like, at this point, I don't really want to have to think about all of these words. And I'm like sticking to what I've been saying, because like, we can unpack that emotional trauma in another time.
In a separate episode.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, there have been designers who have styled scarves in a way that looks like a traditional hijab, and then said, you know, but it's just a scarf, it's just fashion. It's like, where's that line?
Yeah, it's like almost like fetishizing it, like. And I also noticed, okay, so to touch up on that topic, like, yes, I mean it does suck that you have to be in that position, and the fact that you had to convince them why they should not go through with it when it should have been so obvious. But I 100% hear that. Something so similar happened to me, but in the other way around, where I was modeling for this beauty brand. But the girl that was the makeup artist, like, we were just like sitting down and like talking and stuff. And she's like, you know, initially, like, they wanted to have a hijabi model, but they were going to pick another random model and just put the hijab around her. She's like, I told them that is not appropriate, and that is not okay, and we need to find someone who is Muslim. And she was as a woman of color. As if
there's a shortage.
So she understood it. Yeah, I know. It's like, it's really not that hard, guys. Like, we're here. So the same thing happened where someone had to put a stop to it. And initially she like found me, and I was hired through that. But it's so crazy that these stories happen, because I'm just dumbfounded. Like, how could you think that was okay? At like a bigger scope, it's still, their hijab is being represented, but it still kind of makes me, I still don't know how I feel about it. Because if we look at the fashion runways, when it is a hijabi model, the hijab is usually tied a very specific way. I don't know if we can like do a history of when hijabi models were on the runway, of how the scarf looks. It's usually like very polished, usually like a square silk, and it's like pulled back, and it's beautiful. And that is how women do wear it. But would I say, you know,
I don't wear it that way. I actually have never related to how I see it on the. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's done because it still has to be watered down, essentially, in order for the rest of society to absorb it and consume it. Like, I feel like we're still not consumed the way that we want to be. And the representation alone is very important. And it's still good and it's still positive, but I'm only saying this because like, I would just love to see more change, right? So like, when hijabi models were on the runway, like, it was amazing. I think everyone stood up for it, and we felt seen by it. But then like, over time, we're like, okay, we're kind of noticing something, let's try to tweak it a little, or let's try to.
Well, there's also like, there aren't hijab stylists on set. Like, people always hire like hairstylists, even when I'm like, we have to go out of our way to make an effort to be like, we need a hijab stylist. And I don't care if it's like, you're gonna tie my hijab in the most simple way, but like, that's being inclusive. And even, I mean, I have one stylist that I work with, and she's amazing. She does really well with scarves. And so we've like gotten creative with it. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, your Vella is like always the reference. It's like, this is like how, like, you have taught us so many different ways to style and like to feel ourselves in the hijab, where it almost like, it doesn't feel costumey. It feels like how you would want to,
how you look forward to wearing it.
Yeah. How you would look forward to wearing it. Just like how you would look forward to styling your denim or your cardigan, mm-hmm. or whatever else it may be. And it still carries that personal essence. Like, mm-hmm. and there's always that personal touch, because we talk about it. I feel like in the lens that we talk about it, it's through fashion, because it is something that you wear. And like, maybe that's the fun part of the public conversation that we have. All of the rest of the personal stuff is like personal. And so people shouldn't mm-hmm. feel like they have to talk about it, or they have to defend it, or they have to explain it. Like, and I think that conversation gets a little tricky when it comes within our own communities. Like,
mm-hmm. I think we're still unpacking it together.
Oh yeah. I mean, do you get Muslims who comment or message or say anything about like how like hijab and fashion, and being like, it's not a fashion statement. It's not a like that used to be like the comment mm-hmm. that I used to get a long time ago before I was able to just like weed out
people. Oh my god, all the time in the beginning. Oh my god, the biggest backlash ever. Like, I remember like our first cover of like LA Times, it said something about, oh, I forgot the title. It was such a bad title too, now that I think about it, but I was 18 at the time. Always a bad
headline.
So, yeah, always a bad headline of blurring the lines between.
Yeah, and then you get the flack for the headline.
Yeah, but those were never two separate things. Like fashion or being fashionable is something that someone chooses to express, and then modesty is something that you adhere to, but you can still be fashionable while still being modest. Like, it's not two separate things.
It's
like,
it's about the paradox. It's mm-hmm. exactly, it's not this or that, but we're so used to speaking, and not only speaking, but commenting in black and white, like in making it in binaries, essentially, and being like, mm-hmm. well, you can only be either this or that. Well, why can't I wear this for very personal reasons and also happen to style it in a way that you think might be too fashionable? It's still like public commentary on something that is incredibly private.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's changing. So shout out to Gen Zs, because they're paving the way, and they're sticking it back to the I love Gen Zs. They're very unapologetic. They're very like, no, this is how I'm going to express myself. And so I had this change.
Yesterday I mentioned on one of my team calls this TikTok that I saw, and I was like, wow, this person is my hero. It was so iconic. And it was like a high schooler wearing the hijab, and she like had her hand covering her mouth, and she looked like all mischievous. And she wrote, when my teacher confronts me about whether or not I have been charging girls $5 to see my hair in the bathroom. And I was like, that's amazing.
I love
this
humor.
Entrepreneur. Yes. This is fantastic. And I was just like, wow, like, we're really just getting straight to it. We're being so clear. We're being so open. Like, and it's just not that serious.
Humor. Yeah, it isn't. It's not that deep, guys. It's not that deep.
And if it is, it's not your business.
Mm-hmm. But that's something, it kind of goes back to, you're right. Like, it's something that we all need to collectively unpack and like agree on. And it's crazy that like we've allowed it to go this far when so many women feel the same way that we feel. Like, they're in our space where like, yeah, this is personal. Or if anyone does have a comment, share it privately, da 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 da, whatever the case is. So it's like, why is it still being such a public thing? And it's just not fair, man. Like, I feel like Muslim women are always like picked apart. And
well, we also have this I talk a lot on the podcast about horizontal hostility, and just like the hostility that there is between Muslim women in general, because like mm-hmm. I mean, in any sub community that has like the trauma, similar trauma to what we've experienced, that's something that's going to come up. Now there are, I don't know how many hijab brands there are now that are like owned by Muslim. They're almost all like the mm-hmm. ones that we know of are owned by mm-hmm. Muslim women. But what is that community of founders look like? Is it super separate? Is it super like you, like people talking to one another about it? Because it's definitely like different vibe, like, you know, the same way that you would have it in a fashion community.
Well, okay, so me, that's so interesting. Okay, so like me and my girl Ibtihaj, we have such a good like relationship and a really good friendship. So she has Luella and I have Vella, and I feel like we're kind of both really supportive of each other's work. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like hijab to hijab, like that specific thing, no, I don't think, at least for me personally, like I haven't really, like I've never met the other women or been in conversation with them. But I do respect them. And I do think that we each feel, even within, it's so funny that you're like, oh, like you fill a niche, but we, like me and you both know, even within the hijabi modesty community space, there's still so many other pockets, you know, of styles, of like fabrics, of what, whatever the genre is. And I do believe like every hijab brand fulfills their own space, or like you just can't expect, just as much as like someone can't expect when they hire a Muslim hijabi girl for a sponsored post, you're like, oh, we got them, you know, like it's one and done. It's like, no, like Noor's pool or Noor's following is different than Marwa's pool and Marwa's following, because they're interested in
separate, like, we're also just individual people
that have separate interests. Like two Muslim hijabi women can have two separate styles, two separate interests. Therefore, one prefers one brand, another one prefers another brand, and that's okay. And so,
who is the Vella girl?
Okay. So, we actually recently did this internally as a team. Even though I will also say that hijab is it's such a special product where it's not just relevant to one age group. It's really for everyone. Yeah. But the Vella girl, her name is Jenna, and she recently graduated college and she's seeking job opportunities. She lives in the city, newly engaged. She loves to travel, but what's so important for her as well is to be a part of her community and a part of her space, and to actually, she loves doing community work. And she loves embracing, she loves being fashionable, but living in like a semi-city suburb area, she's able to experiment, but also keep it timeless. So that is our core Vella girl. So whenever we like think of our collections, we're like, all right, so what does Jenna want next? Like, we just call her Jenna. Like,
oh my gosh, what does she need? Cool that it's an actual, she's like a character now.
Yes, she is. But I do hope, and I do believe that it is like the Vella's general customer base. So we try to make Jenna feel seen, but then at the same exact time, we're like, all right, Jenna's mother, come on in, you know? It's like, so now we're like expanding. Cause I've noticed that even with me and with my own mother, like my mom used to only wear a certain way, but once like me and Tasneem started the brand, she would slowly start to wear it. And now the second something drops, she just takes it from me and she's like, you're not getting it back. And she's even gotten like her friends to like wear it too. And I think that's so beautiful. Like, I love the fact that it's such like a shared product, you know, it's like mom and daughter, like getting ready together.
That's so special.
Yeah. So
Vella, I mean, my mom definitely like only wears Vella.
I love your mom. You don't understand. Like, we need a separate episode about Salwa, because
oh my gosh,
I still think about her from time to time. She's mashallah has,
I mean, so it should be Jenna and Salwa. Salwa should be your like next clientele.
It's done.
Mom has five kids, runs a nonprofit, but wants to be stylish.
That is Jenna. Like that's Jenna. Yeah. But Jenna after five kids. Right? I felt like I just explained like a
That's so amazing.
Yeah. So, wow. So I think that's where Bella's growing too, identifying mm-hmm. that this space is needs to still be more all inclusive, even more. So recognizing the fact that younger girls under the ages of 14 who are practicing or have to wear it to Saturday school, they want to feel good in it too. So kind of developing a product for them. And then there's the beautiful mother who, you know, still has a lot going on and is running everything and is powerfully holding it all together, but she also needs her scarves too. So, I feel like that's where Bella's at right now. And, I feel like before we used to always look externally of like what's next. And I feel like mm-hmm. because of this last decade, we were able to build such a special community of women. We just now look internally. And just like,
I mean, sometimes the biggest answers that you're looking for, most times they're right mm-hmm. in front of you. You just have to be open to seeing them. I'm realizing that so much these days, like that looking outside externally or looking elsewhere for answers or for stories, like with before looking internally, you're missing the things that have mm-hmm. impacted you the most. But sometimes the things in front of you are the hardest to see. So you they'll reveal themselves to you when you're ready, essentially, is where I'm at.
I totally
What did that. The last couple of years reveal to you?
I feel like it's revealed that I've always carried on like little Marwa, and I always kind of had
old is she?
She's like still 16, 17, you know, where she's still very intimidated because
and intimidating.
Things are very intimidating for her. What's that thing where you feel like what's that thing called? Where
imposter syndrome?
Imposter syndrome. Yes. Oh my God. Yes. So I've been dealing with that, and so these past couple of years was me trying to like unpack all of that and remind myself like you deserve this. You belong here. You are a CEO, like that is a big title, mm-hmm. own it. And I always felt like I couldn't claim it or like I couldn't mm-hmm. have it. And it was just because all my life I was just taught that I couldn't do it. And it wasn't necessarily because like my family said that, it was what society made me feel like.
Well, it's like them also not taking it very seriously. Like it's like mm-hmm. people take like either still seeing you as a kid or seeing you as like the, like not really yes. Respecting like when you are in the startup mode. I mean, you were
well. To be fair, I was 18.
Such a slow burn. Yeah, I mean, but still, now there are so many. I mean, we started our work when we were teenagers, and now there are so many young teens who are starting their own businesses, and people and marketers and people and advertisers. We're all looking towards younger people mm-hmm. and being like, give us the insight, tell us the answers. So like, there definitely was. Especially because a lot of like what we did was at the very beginning of social media. So we didn't really mm-hmm. understand the youth's voice almost mm-hmm. as much as we do as now, where we take it. We take it way more seriously. It's seen as a lot more powerful. It's not just one person. It's so many people. We're looking, we're talking about young people all the time. And it's like why we look up to people who are, I mean, people who are younger than me are my teachers.
Yeah.
But maybe we were that for our mentors too.
You're right. I mean, I never
did. You have a mentor
in that way
during that time?
I mean, I had a few people that I would seek advice from, and they were consistent. But I wouldn't say a mentor. No, I think that is very important to anyone who is wanting to start a business or. Who is young with all of these big dreams, I think it is really important to have a mentor because it helps you turn them into reality. Mm-hmm. Because you yourself are probably so scared to kind of like achieve them almost. Or at least me, that's how I felt. So looking back, I think, like a mentor probably would have been beneficial, but I think,
but you found that validation within yourself, and that's also really mm-hmm. big too.
Yeah. Well, that, and also I want to give the credit to my sister, Disneem. Like, you know, like she was kind of like mm-hmm. that guiding light for me. Anything, if any problem happened or something went wrong, she would always be there. She was the backbone. She was a problem solver. She was the goal seeker with me. Like she was really the one that was like, no, like we can do this, like, you know. And so these last couple years, it's just me trying to like reclaim kind of like that mm-hmm. sense of like power that I had, and not be intimidated by myself anymore, and kind of mm-hmm. let her through and be like, no, she can be a boss. But then it's also being really open in this space, because I know how important it is for other Muslim women to feel like, you know, they are also given the tools, because it's, you know, just as important for them to like see someone do it. It's also important for them to believe that they can do it. So and I want to be of service, kind of like how your bio is. I'm not sure if you changed it, but I loved your bio, like being of service.
Well, that's our company, at your service.
At your service. Yes. Okay. And I love that, because it just makes you feel so good, you know? And it makes others feel good. So
yeah, it's a really clear intention.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say your intention with the story of Vela is right now?
Oh, that's really big. The intention is to make every woman feel like she is empowered by her self-expression and by her choice. The intention for Vela is to create a very safe and open space, because there's so many kind of like different levels of modesty, or how a girl feels with the hijab. And I think all of that space is welcomed and shouldn't be nitpicked, or someone should say something about you type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the intention with Vela is to just make a woman truly believe that like she is special. And it's to curate scarves to make that feeling happen.
Well, I see you do it every day. I'm so proud of you, and I'm so excited to see where Vela's gonna go. And I mean, I don't know if people remember this, but there was a little stint where Muddle was also making clothing, and it was fire, and we're hoping she brings that back. And I know that there's like a new collection coming out with retro prints, which is like iconic, and so you, because you have such incredible creative direction. I mean, the imagery and the feel, like you get all of it. You get the whole vision, the feeling, the essence, and all of it. So thank you for doing what you're doing. And I have some not so rapid fire questions for you.
Okay.
Before we go, what is your favorite hijab style right now?
The twist one.
Okay. So when you wrap around your head and then you
this thing.
We tie
it's just so clean.
As like a side twist.
Yeah, so it's like a side twist, and then you just pull it back.
And question, when are we going to start getting more tutorials on how to do different styles?
Soon. Literally, we like filmed it in our last photo shoot.
How many did you film?
Four.
Okay, I need to go faster. I can do four. I can go with four. That's fine.
Okay.
What is your go to three colors that you'll wear? If you could only have three scarves forever, which ones would they be?
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're okay, on an island. There's a lot of people, so you do wear the scarf.
It's like a deep emerald, like green. That jewel tone. And then this color right here. It's just like a rich kind of like coffee color.
Yeah. Like a coffee caramel. And then
you
always,
I mean, I know people are like, come on, black, but it's like black is just true, you know?
Classic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually like want a few, like I need to stock up on black Vela scarves because my black ones always get so destroyed on set because it's like the base of what we use for so many things.
And then like overtime washing.
So annoying.
Like,
yeah.
I got you.
Well, and next question actually is what is like your care with your scarves? Are you tossing them in the wash? Are you hand washing them? Are you steaming them every day? Like, how are we doing this no wrinkle situation?
You're about to expose me.
Yeah, I know. Tell me that you don't do any of it.
I don't. So I feel like I am that typical designer where I design all these beautiful colors and all these beautiful fabrics and I don't wear anything. Like, I still have to order myself the Dark Forest collection. I still haven't ordered it for myself. And I just kind of, my trick, to be honest, is I have like this like ladder thing. So after every day, I have a Downy wrinkle releaser fabric spray.
That works?
Mm-hmm. I spray it and then I put it over the ladder and it's good. If I do, okay, fine. I don't wash them. I just order myself a new one. But if I were to wash them, you literally just in a cold bucket or fill up your sink with cold water, a little bit of fabric softener, you just dip your scarf in. If there is a stain, kind of rub it out.
Yeah.
And you just hang dry it. You're good.
A fabric softener. You know what's so funny is Adam on Listen Up, on his Listen Up tags, where it's supposed to have the care instructions, he literally writes, don't wash it, just buy a new one. As a joke, of course. We do support our sustainability efforts.
Yes,
I'm not.
No, but I mean, like, eventually. I mean,
obviously.
If you, like, what's something called? If you donate it and then, like, you thrift it after, it's still, like, you're still being sustainable with that supply chain. But yeah.
I mean, I'm always passing it down to my sisters when I'm done.
Yeah.
You're also you introduced me to cookie butter in LA. You brought me a jar.
I remember.
And we went for a hike. Yeah. And then I tried cookie butter for the first time and it changed my life. So what is your go-to snack on the job besides a jar of cookie butter?
I'm so old school Arab, like bizzard. Like sunflower seeds.
I was gonna say seeds and nuts.
Yes, seeds and nuts, literally. That is my go-to snack because it's like filling and you can just like grab a couple. And
favorite Syrian dish?
Mahshi.
Oh my God, really? That's my least favorite.
No, come on. You gotta come over.
Mahshi is stuffed peppers. Yeah, I think
squash, stuffed eggplant, stuffed peppers. I love the variety of the stuffed.
I don't mind the stuffed onions.
Yes, when it's like kind of spicy. Mm-hmm. When they like, yeah, okay.
You know, so. I liked stuffed things, so I should like it. I just maybe I haven't had the right one yet.
I mean, you got rishta, so
that's true. We do have rishta, so that's all I need in life.
Exactly,
it's our Libyan spicy soupy pasta. Oh, and what is a song that your go to song for joy?
Mm-mm. I can't do this.
Yeah, you have to.
To. Okay, fine. Like instant joy.
Instant.
Okay, fine. Instant. And like it's like emotional and like happiness is the Lilo and Stitch one. I don't know why. It's just so cute. I forgot the title of it.
Well, we're making a playlist of this season and including everyone's songs of what they go to for joy. So we're gonna have Lilo and Stitch on our thank you for welcome. Making sure that we include a Lilo and Stitch song
very welcome.
On our playlist. Iconic, amazing.
I'll probably
and finally 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 what do you know for sure?
That this life is so temporary. I know we hear it, but it's for sure. This means nothing. This will, I'm not going to leave with it. My gold, I'm not going to take it. It's so temporary. So the only thing you can leave in this world is how you make people feel. And if you want you don't have to build something to have a legacy. You just have to have the right intention and have the right feeling, and that even if it's the impression is set on one person, you've set your legacy.
Mm. Yeah. Thanks, Marwa, for giving me the interview of the decade, the interview that we've all been waiting for, and for always sharing your story and being so open with. You were like that person who would always tell me where you got your clothes from, and I always appreciated that. It's always like a thing.
You have to.
And you were like, you have to just, I don't, and I like, I actually buy the things that you're, I'm like, yeah, where did you get that
really?
From? Oh, yeah? Okay, oh great. God. Yes.
That is the biggest compliment. Yes. Like, that's the biggest compliment I could ever receive. So thank you so much. And thank you for giving me and thank you for building this space. And thank you for giving me all of your time and being so thoughtful with all of your questions and guiding everything through.
Oh my gosh.
It was really refreshing. I kind of felt like we almost just had a conversation because we just haven't caught up in so long. So this is just a recording of us catching up and talking about all the things we've been wanting to talk about.
I know. I definitely spoke a lot more than I typically do, but I was like, this is my, no. I am the Vela girl.
Yes.
I am Jenna. Jenna.
And Salwa.
And Salwa, yes. Amazing. For more Marwa and Vela, you can follow on Instagram at MARWAATIK and at Vela Scarves. And of course, visit velascarves.com. As always, at your service.